Hi, I'm Connor Daly, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 440, July 8th, 2010. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Check them out at CameronKarting.com. You know you want to.
On today's program, Robert Kubica makes a smart decision. Nigel Mansell will be guest steward at Silverstone. And ART says, we are not ready for Formula One. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Oh, I'm excited. Silverstone this weekend. Nigel Mansell, the guest steward, which is really appropriate.
Yes, what's that going to mean for Michael?
It won't mean too much for Michael, but still, I think it's exciting. Former British world champion as a guest steward, and then of course you have.
Actually, I know what it means. It means that Lewis Hamilton's kind of got like a carte blanche for whatever he wants to do this weekend.
Well, I don't know. It could be Jenson Button as well.
Exactly.
See, because Lewis Hamilton has the luck, the Teflon, where the things just glide off of him.
Exactly.
And of course, good news. Lewis Hamilton sent a text message to Fernando Alonso, and of course they've made up. Which, I mean, Fernando wasn't pissed off at Lewis; he was pissed off at the system.
Yeah, he was more upset with the stewards and the way the penalty was applied than he was. Lewis just happened to be the guy that committed the offense. It had nothing to do with him. It was all about what happened because of it.
Exactly. So anyway, they've made up. But really, the big news for me is Robert Kubica signs a contract to stay at Renault till 2012, Stephen.
Two more years with Robert in the yellow car.
And two more years could really mean heading to the promised land.
Well, it certainly gives Renault someone to build toward, you know. It's very helpful to have a driver that you can kind of build the car around. Because that's pretty much what Renault did with Fernando Alonso when they went and won their two world championships, is they pretty much built the car to suit Fernando's style.
Well, the only thing that they had going for them then was they had Fernando, great engineers, and the other thing they had was Michelin.
That's true.
That package was unbeatable. It was exciting. So now we'll see what happens. Let's see how Renault works with Pirelli.
Yeah, you know, and that's going to be one of those things to watch for next season, because, you know, we've seen it where when we went to slicks with Bridgestone, some people got it right. Some people blew it completely.
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing that nobody's really talked about too much, and I'm surprised, but you hear how Michael Schumacher is always talking about the tires. They just can't get to grips with the tires. Well, see, the problem is when Schumacher retired in 2006, Bridgestone, for all those years, had built tires specifically for Ferrari, especially during the Michelin-Bridgestone wars.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ferrari got everything that they wanted, and everybody else who used Bridgestones Got Bridgestones that were built for Ferraris.
Exactly.
So, in other words, Schumacher was so used to custom shoes, you know, made in Italy or Japan. And all of a sudden, now he has to wear off-the-rack shoes, and it's not working so well.
No, but definitely a little bit of a challenge because, you know, the tires were suited to Michael's driving style on that given track. Because they were building tires for each and every track.
Exactly. So I can see why Schumacher is having a problem. But anyway, I think this is a good move for Renault. I think Robert Kubica is going to do well. And I think Renault, with the Pirellis and the step forwards they have been making, could be the team to beat in 2011.
They certainly could be one of the contenders.
Absolutely. I'm positive about it, Stephen. I just have...
You positive about Renault's success?
Yes.
Really?
I've seen the future.
You can get the crystal ball out again.
Yes, sirree, Bob. So, no, that's very exciting, and I certainly hope they do get that MasterCard sponsorship. It's really good stuff for Renault. This is really big, Stephen. And this is pretty much stability now. The silly season is pretty much over. I mean, there's no Vittorio Liuzzi silly season. You see what I'm saying?
Well, we're not really concerned about who's going to be driving that in those six cars at the back of the grid next season.
No, I mean, it's not going to make, you know...
Well, basically the top three teams are pretty much, or the top four or five teams are pretty much set as far as driver lineup goes for the upcoming season. So
I agree.
It's not going to be the same as it has been in past years where you're kind of like going, ooh, who's going, you know, because McLaren's not going to have an opening this year. And, you know, Ferrari isn't going to, you know, none of the big teams have an opening for some, you know, for us to look down the grid and go, well, who's moving up?
Yeah. So pretty much this ends it all. With Robert Kubica signing for Renault for two more years, and he says, quote, "It was a straightforward decision for me to continue with a team where I feel at home. What's important to me is to be in the right atmosphere with a good group of people where everybody is pulling in the same direction. This is what we have tried to build from the beginning of my time with Renault." So very good. You know, he's working with them really, really well, and I think this is great. And like I said, everybody is signed. I mean, it's pretty much done with, and now we can just focus. Of course, McLaren this weekend will be showing up with the blown diffuser.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It'll be interesting to see how well they do, but I thought it was interesting that Williams came out and said, oh, we don't know if we'll use ours or not. We'll try it in practice and then make a decision. I'm kind of like going, really?
Well, Christian Horner came out and said, you know, don't get excited. Just having one blown diffuser is not going to make a new package. I mean, it's an entire package.
And yeah.
Just that one upgrade can't help a team leap forward, and it doesn't give you that, you know, 6/10.
Look at what happened in Valencia. We had three teams that came with blown diffusers who didn't have them previously. Two of them, very helpful. The third one, not so much. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of, you know... Like it always is. It's package.
And it's not only it's
another, you know, piece of your puzzle, and it will provide you benefit probably, but whether or not it's going to be that, you know, Hail Mary that's going to save you, just don't bet on it.
Well, you know, Ferrari certainly got thrown the sabot, you know, let's say, got right into the cogs when the safety car came out. I think this weekend they'll have a better chance to show off their blown diffuser.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they got kind of short-sheeted on that. You know, it was almost more like they ran over a couple caltrops and, you know, blew out all their tires.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to be very curious to see how Ferrari runs in practice. And, of course, the new layout, the fast layout, the arena-style layout that they have at Silverstone now should be fascinating.
Should be fun. I'm looking forward to it, you know. It was a good track, and I think they've actually made changes to make it a better track, which is a nice change of pace.
Well, it was such a great track. Sometimes changes can scare me.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's kind of like, yeah, you're going to change it? What are you doing that for?
Yeah, but now it looks like it could be one of the fastest tracks on the calendar, and certainly I'm looking forward to practice to see what happens.
Which
now,
means chicanes next year, right?
Well, possibly if something ridiculous happens, but we shall see. Of course, I think there's more pressure on Ferrari this weekend than any other team. They have to come up with some kind of more than a podium. The podium that
they basically need to get.
They need to get a victory.
Ideally a victory, but at the very least, they've got to have both cars in the top four.
Of course. To be honest with you, I think the British drivers in Britain at the British Grand Prix, that's more of a jinx than pressure.
Well,
it either happens or it doesn't.
Well, it kind of has been. If you look over the last 3-4 years, you go to Silverstone and you're a British driver. What, Jenson Button 2 years in a row? Basically gone? Or starting in the back of the pack 2 years in a row?
Yeah, and I expect that same thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, frankly, for a British driver at the British Grand Prix, the distractions are over the top.
You mean the partying and the British women?
Yeah, and the fact
and that...
I bet you that they have probably 5 times as many personal appearances that they need to, that they have to make than they do at any other race.
Not only that, but instead of salad in the morning, I bet you they opt for the bubbles and squeak.
Exactly.
You know, which is going to linger in the tummy and is going to cause problems.
And then, that pint with breakfast, it doesn't really help either.
Exactly. So, yeah, a lot of things could happen, but we'll see what happens. But I still think the pressure's on Ferrari. They haven't had a win since the boring race of Bahrain. And not only that, but Fernando's first season with Ferrari, the expectations were high. I mean, if you saw the cover, the April issue of F1 Racing magazine, it was Fernando racing. You know, they were saying this is the combination that everybody was dreading because they would dominate the world. And that has not happened.
No, and part of the reason is because Red Bull was already out in front. Frankly, the one victory Ferrari has was a bit of a gift. And the fact that the Red Bull couldn't finish the race.
No, exactly. And I think a lot of people weren't paying attention to Red Bull at the end of last year.
Yeah.
How could you be caught out today, this year?
Red Bull the entire season last year. They were competitive the entire time. They came out of the gate without a double diffuser. And we're still, if Vettel doesn't crash into Kubica in Australia, they're probably in the hunt for the last 5 races instead of just kind of watching from the sidelines.
And what I find tremendous is everybody's praising the Mercedes motor. You know, oh, God, it's the best. Hello.
Hello. What's driving the Red Bull? Yeah. And none of the failures have been engineered.
Today, it's not the motor. I hate to say it, but it's aerodynamics, design, and the package.
Yeah, it's all package. You know, it's suspension, it's diffusers, it's, all the tips and tricks, F-ducts. The motors are basically the same motors we were using 4 years ago. If they aren't bulletproof yet, somebody's not doing their job.
And Ferrari and Domenicali specifically says we have to win. If we don't come up with a win in the next few races, we are going down.
Well, I think what Domenicali is basically saying is that if they don't win the next 3 races, they're moving on to the next year's car.
Exactly. And a lot of people are doing that. Don't forget, but Domenicali said for sure it would be very important if it would be crucial for the championships for motivation, and I think that is really the key before the summer break to have the kind of result that I think our team deserves, and of course the summer break that comes up very soon. They have to do something exciting to get that team motivated, and of course the decision to move on to the 2011 car.
Yeah, it comes down to the point where at what point do we no longer have a realistic chance of catching the leaders? And when you hit that point, you basically go, okay, we'll maybe do a little bit of the development that we do this year will be basically geared towards putting it on the 2011 car.
Exactly. And trust me, Renault is already focused on the 2011 car, and you will see experimental components going on to the R30. That will be called upgrades for this year, but they will actually be for next year. Also, Lotus coming out announcing that they are focused on next year's car, which is not a big surprise, because really...
Kind of weren't they at the beginning of the season? It's like, you get a car on the track when you're that far down the grid, it's pretty much, it's development 24/7. You're always looking to what you're going to do to improve the car. Development is continuous. It's... when you're that far down the grid.
Of course, and I'm convinced that Mercedes Grand Prix after Silverstone will also focus all development with lots of input from Michael Schumacher on the 2011 car. They want to see Michael up front for the Fatherland.
And for Mercedes, because when Michael wins...
Fatherland Mercedes.
He hasn't had a chance to win for Mercedes, so...
And he will. He will win for Mercedes. Trust me, Stephen. This is not over until the fat lady sings, except for that Spain beat Germany today. And it reminded me of 2006, Fernando, el hombre muy macho de España. Bravo, 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 España! So there you have it. I'm sure he sent a text message to Fernando and Pedro de la Rosa, for that matter. And Jaime Alguersuari, why not?
Yeah, all the Spaniards.
Yes, so...
He probably sent one to the German team, too, what did you do?
It's going to be a great game. Holland against España. I'm looking forward to it. Both countries have never won a World Cup, so this is nice, fresh, and exciting.
Fun to watch matches where, basically, they're going to win their first.
Okay, we got Silverstone. Any predictions, any thoughts from you, Stephen, that open mind about what's going to happen?
The problem is with my predictions this season.
And please excuse all the uhs. Yeah.
Well, my predictions this season are pretty much going to stick to I haven't been very open-minded about it. The Red Bulls have been so solid. You know, I don't see the blown diffuser providing that much more impetus to McLaren, and especially with the drag for McLaren of all the extra curriculars, because they're in England with two English drivers, I don't think is going to give them any benefit. Red Bulls. Sebastian.
Okay, good for you. I think McLaren will be very competitive. Red Bull, of course, will be very competitive. Ferrari has to prove themselves. They have to prove themselves to their people.
Got to keep the Tifosi happy. They might be throwing things important on the track when we get to Maranello.
It's very, very important. Of course, I think Renault will continue to be maybe fourth. So I don't think we're going to see any big surprises here in Silverstone. But still, I think it's going to be a very exciting race. Of course, Damon Hill is pretty pumped up being the president of the BRDC.
Well, now that he's pretty much knocked out the competition in England for the race.
Well, this is the best place for the race.
I agree.
I'm really happy it's at Silverstone. Everybody should be happy it's at Silverstone. Even French people should be happy it's at Silverstone. And speaking of French people, Manicool is trying to get the French Grand Prix back. I think that's good news, but they said there's one stipulation. It's got to be cheap.
Yeah, and Bernie's not going to go cheap.
I know.
Came out in the press this past week. Austin, Texas actually paid Bernie like $25 million for the rights.
Well, and you know, Austin, Texas still has to come up with a lot of cash.
$250 million to build the track.
Yeah, so I still have a lot of reservations about that. We'll see what happens. I'm sure Nasser will have more information through the coming weeks on what happens with Chad Hurley and his sidekicks, but I still have a lot of reservations on Austin, Texas, even though I'm optimistic and I certainly hope we do get a U.S. Grand Prix by 2012 because we need one. But anyway, there you have it. Silverstone, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait for Friday practice. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
Hi, this is Steve with F1Weekly.com. Our podcasts are brought to you by Google AdSense and the Firefox web browser. The innovative Firefox browser makes surfing the web faster and safer with the included Google toolbar and features like autofill and spell check. It will make your browsing more convenient. Together, they'll change the way you surf the internet for free. Just click on the button on our homepage.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And before I spin the globe, I want to mention that on this week's program, we have an interview with an F1 Weekly listener, a longtime listener, Mr. Burak Sarvag. And of course, next week, we have an O Canada special. Teddy Yip Jr., Danielle Murad, and of course, Robert Wickens. So stay tuned for those fantastic conversations. So here we go. As we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and musical regards from Brother James Brown. Are you feeling good?
I'm feeling good, and I got a brand new bag.
Oh, same here. Thank you. Today in the brand new bag, we have World Series by Renault, your favorite series. Everyone is a Renault win. Formula 2, F3 Euro Series, DTM, MotoGP, IndyCars, and a moment in motorsport history. We'll look at American first in F1, this being July.
You know what's unbelievable?
What?
This is all for free.
Yeah, no charge to calling party.
Wow.
Okay, our first stop is in Barcelona and racing on two wheels. Third pole position in a row for men from Mallorca. Senior Jorge Lorenzo, or as Valentino Rossi calls him, Jorge Lorenzo on a Yamaha. Ben Spies was the best American qualifier and fifth on privately entered Tech 3 Yamaha. Rossi's replacement, Wataru Yoshikawa, qualified 3.7 seconds off the pace. Race was his first in 8 years. He is a factory Yamaha test rider. And my understanding is that team in MotoGP, kind of like in F2 and many series, they are required to field a bike if the rider gets hurt or if he's dropped by the team. They can only go two races without two bikes, you know. So they brought in... Most MotoGP fans are not thrilled about this choice, but you know, it's their bike, they can do whatever they want. Yeah.
Kind of smells like a Uji Ide.
Exactly, on two wheels. Lorenzo turned his pole position into a dominant win, his fifth of the season, after holding off a strong challenge from Honda rider Andrea Dovizioso, who then crashed out halfway through the race. Another local yokel, Danny Pedrosa, was second for Honda, and Ducati's Casey Stoner was third. Ben Spies was the highest placed American in sixth on a Yamaha. Lorenzo leads the championship with 165, 52 points ahead of second man Danny Pedrosa. Nicky Hayden is the highest placed American in fourth with 69 points. And rumor is that probably sometime this month it will be announced that Rossi is going to Ducati.
Exciting.
Yeah,
Italiano,
it is.
Italiano.
Yeah. Can you imagine Rossi, Ducati, and Mugello?
Crazy.
Yeah.
And Tifosi.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure CFD Racer will be absolutely delighted. Now we cross the border into Portugal and Portimao in Algarve for the F2 race. Winner in race one was Jolyon Palmer, his fourth victory of the season. Benjamin Bailey of Belgium was second. Dean Stoneman won the second race with Jolyon Palmer second. Jolyon leads the championship over Stoneman, 182 points to 156. You know, that was such a brouhaha. You win the Formula 2, you get a test ride, drive with Williams, and Andy Suchek of Spain won the championship, and I don't see him anywhere. I mean, he's probably in Super League or Major League something, you know.
But Auto GP?
No, I don't even think he's in Auto GP. Romain Grosjean is rattling cages there just by one appearance.
Apparently.
Yeah, and he might
just wins every time.
Yeah, he's very good, you know. And he probably will be doing more AutoGP races. Now we come to World Touring Cars, also in action in Portimao. You've seen this track in Portimao, right? This is so beautiful. This proves you don't need Mr. Tilke. I don't think it's a Tilke track. And they have a track that they built in Argentina, in San Luis, something like that. Man, that is absolutely gorgeous. No Tilke there, too. Okay, local boy, ex-F1 racer and podium finisher from the very historic 2005 US Grand Prix, Thiago Monteiro was the winner in race one in his Seat. Ivan Muller was second in his Chevrolet. Do you remember when Thiago Monteiro got out of his car after the U.S. Grand Prix that year? Mm-hmm. How excited he was.
He was. He was excited.
Yeah, it was a big day in his life.
Well, you know.
Podium in a Formula One race is a big deal.
Even if there's only six cars.
Yeah. Result was the same in race two in terms of cars, Seat over Chevrolet. This time, Gabriel Tarquini was the winner with Muller again second. And Tarquini, once upon a time, used to be in Formula Uno.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day.
Back in the day, sir, when there was pre-qualifying. That was a lot of fun. From Portugal, we tap away to Budapest for World Series by Renault, Acción, Aussie mate Daniel Ricciardo. This kid is going places. But I used to say that about Romain Grosjean also. I mean, you know, it's based on their talents, how what future holds. Time will tell. But anyway, Ricciardo took his second win of the season in the opening race of the weekend. Russian Mikhail Elishin was second. Sten Pentus, I think he's from like Latvia or Lithuania. He turned his first pole position of the series into his first victory of the series. Albert Costa was second. Greg Mansell, do you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Greg Mansell was fifth and only American in the race. Jake Rosenzweig was eighth. From Hungary, we go north by northwest.
One of my favorite movies.
We're Hollywood inspired today. To Germany and Motorsport Street Festival at Nürburgring for DTM and F3 Euro Series. This was very good news. First career pole position in DTM for Ralf Schumacher.
Absolutely. This is big news.
Yeah, this is like Danica getting a pole position in NASCAR.
Well, Danica always gets a pole position.
Thank you. Then he pulled a Monty and jumped the start. Jamie Green was the winner for Mercedes. This is his third win in a row in the streets of Nuremberg. And this is victory number 8 in a row for Mercedes. And they have won like 8 of the last 13 races in the streets. Mathias Ekstrom of Sweden, who came and raced here at the Sears Point stock car race, was second in his Audi. And final man on the podium was Bruno Spengler of Canada. In another Mercedes, Bruno leads the championship with 32 points, and Green is second on 22 points. Ralf ended up 11th and is also out of the top 10 in the championship, which is a big surprise because this year he has the
new car,
upgraded car. The main F3 event was won by Italian Eduardo Mortara. Local boy Marco Wittmann was second, and Valtteri Bottas was third. In the second race, and a lot of this action, you know, from Nürburgring is available on YouTube. I was watching it over the weekend, so it's pretty interesting. So, in the second race, Bottas was the winner over Wittmann and Mortara, and this is first series win for Bottas, who is also a test driver for Williams this year. Bottas has won the F3 Masters at Zandvoort past two seasons, but that is not part of the championship. Mortara leads the championship with 54 points. Wittmann is second on 39, and Bottas is third with 32 points. This series has taken a serious hit since the launch of the GP3 championship, which is fielding 30 cars at every event, while the F3 Euro Series race at Nürburgring saw about a dozen cars on the grid. And next round is at the Nürburgring in August. And they're talking right now of merging F3 Euro Series with, you cannot run a series with 12 drivers. So they're thinking of merging it with British F3. So let's see. F3 should be kept alive. You know, it's a major series. Grand Prix news briefs. You may have... Melime was running late. Dartford Tunnel was, you know, clogged. You may have mentioned some of these. Anyway, no art in F1. Nicola Todd's ART team has withdrawn its application for an F1 berth next season. As always, money is the reason. So everybody was saying, oh, he's the son of FIA head honcho. He'll get the slot. Now he's gone. The things are looking cipher may be deciphered and may get a slot in F1. What say you?
Well, I think ART, who's had a lot of success, is looking at HRT. He's looking at Lotus and looking at Virgin Racing and how much they're spending. And how much time they're spending at the back of the grid, is it worth it?
Yeah. You know this national company from Angola, Sonangol, they are the title sponsor for Super League Series. It would take some crazy guy from some oil-rich country who can write a big check, no accountability, no, you know what I mean, it would take something like that or a big government effort. I don't think that, and that's why I will be shocked if the Tavo Hellman situation comes to fruition, the Grand Prix in Austin.
No, I agree.
Yeah, we'll talk more on
and
this.
Even later. The Cypher Group situation.
Yeah, it will take a behemoth like IBM or a FedEx, people who can
Coca-Cola.
Punch in 30, 40 million a year and, you know, keep on going like Toyota was going. Oh, next year is going to be our year.
Or like BP.
Oh, yeah. They are always drilling for success.
Dude, that makes seem to have money to burn.
Yeah, and they are really living up to their slogan, you know, Beyond Petroleum.
Exactly.
But we'll see.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, it is. You mean the BBC? Mm-hmm. Okay, Kubica has renewed his contract with Renault. Now Massa can sleep well at Red Roof Inn in Maranello.
And I saw him there.
So do you think this is good news?
No,
are you
I
happy?
Did. I meant we talked, yeah. Me and Steve talked about it. I think this is very, very good news.
Of course he thought it was good news.
No, I think this is great news. This is good news for Renault and good news for Robert Kubica.
Yeah, this is beginning to look like, you know, I don't know if you noticed this. In many interviews, he has always said, we will do well if the team listen to me. And I think that's where he was. Problem with BMW, they were doing their way. And this operation to me is now beginning to look like, seriously, like Alonso in his first years at Renault.
And to be honest with you,
very talented. Very focused. You just need some right people and the right car, which will happen in due course of time, and then voila.
And if you look at Alonso's first years at Renault and compare them to Kubica, Kubica is making less mistakes. Kubica is a much more consistent driver. And I hate to say this, but Kubica could be even better than Fernando at Renault.
Well, you never know. I mean, but he has a lot of experience.
Yeah, compared to what Fernando had when he got
yeah.
to
exactly.
Renault, he's got a lot more experience.
Yeah. But, you know, I've been going through some old magazines, and I was reading, which I'm going to bring up one of these days, comparison of how teammates did against their drive, you know, against when they first came into Formula One. And there was a comparison of Alonso with Alex Yung and whoever his other teammate was. I mean, he just blew them away. And that's what you need to do. It's like, you know, people are saying Petrov is not doing good. Well, he's not a second and a half slower than Kubica. So, he, you know, with no experience, and he's doing pretty decent. Same with Hülkenberg. He's obviously not doing as was expected, as even what I was expecting, doing worse than that. But, you know, he's not 1 second behind Hülkenberg. So it's just a matter of putting it all together. Okay, R. Nige will be on the stewards panel at Silverstone. That should be interesting.
Oh, we mentioned that too. I mean, that's going to be fascinating. We have R. Nige, British world champion. Then we have Jenson Button, Lewis Hamilton. It's out of control.
Yeah,
Damon Hill's probably going to come down and visit. Yeah. Jackie Stewart will be around.
We figured carte blanche for, you know, the two British drivers, any penalties.
No penalties, like, at all.
It's like,
no,
oh,
see,
let the safety car come out and let's let him go.
No, the thing is, you know, if a couple of guys bang wheels and one of them takes the lead, Nigel is going to say, well, that's what I did to PK. It's absolutely normal.
Perfect.
But I have yet to see a driver in any series make the pass R. Nige did in Mexico. I love it. Anyway, and also there's a little mini F1 Weekly Familia going on at Silverstone Friday, I believe. Dr. Mark Farrington and Mr. Peter Brazier.
Yeah, and they have F1 Weekly hats.
Oh, really?
Yes, I sent four to Peter. Of course, they were purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Miguel, his hats just were shipped to Portugal today.
Mm-hmm.
So
is
the hats
also
are going
at Silverstone?
Out, ladies and gentlemen. F1 Weekly hats.
Hats off to F1 Weekly listeners.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, GP2 news. Luca Filippi will replace injured Josef Kral in the Silverstone round of GP2 at Supernova team. He's from Czech Republic. Poor kid had the same type of accident that Mark Webber had in Valencia. So we wish him speedy recovery. Indy cars at Watkins Glen. Big crash in practice for Ernesto Viso, also known as EJ Viso of Venezuela. Good news, he is okay and finished 11th on Sunday. Winner was Will Power over fellow Aussie and Penske teammate Ryan Briscoe. Will Power has really done a tremendous job. He was basically out of a ride. Penske put him, you know, he put him in a few races in the third car, and he immediately was basically sometimes more impressive, but equally as impressive as the two. It's just like the Gilles Villeneuve debut. You know, he out-qualified on his debut Jochen Mass. That's what it takes.
It's a simple recipe.
It is a simple recipe. Motor racing is a very simple business. If you have talent, you will go places. And when you hear all these people, you know, all the time complaining, it's like, you know, dude, why don't you just go and drive faster than that guy, whoever the case may be. Then, you know.
Exactly. Just outpace your teammate.
Yeah.
Well, how hard is that?
There you go. Same team.
It's
but there are exceptions. I'm not going into those today.
I'll text you later.
Yeah, please do. With some powder, okay? Okay, well, what are we now? Indy Lights race was won by Jean-Carl Vernet of Lyon, France, over James Hinchcliffe of Canada, and third man from Colombia, Senor Sebastian Saavedra. Now we come to your favorite racer and your favorite track, Daytona. The Coke Zero 400, once called the Firecracker 400, and also previously known as, or after that, Pepsi 400, was won by Kevin Harvick, his second win of the season. Casey Kane, no relation to Casey Kasem, was second, and Jeff Gordon was third. The nationwide race, this was very emotional for the local fans there. The nationwide race was won by Dale Jr. driving number 3 Chevrolet.
Wow.
Yeah, that was touchy.
Feeling.
Absolutely. In off-track action, this is also all about feelings. Jimmy Johnson, 4 in a row champion, has struck again. This time he has become a papito. Both his daughter and wife Chandra are doing well, according to a team spokesperson, and our congratulations to the Johnson familia of El Cajon, California. In related news, wives of Gordon, Jamie McMurray, and Monty are also expecting later this year. So there'll be a lot of, crying in the NASCAR
nation. Aren't some of these cars sponsored by Viagra?
Yeah, and Huggies too.
See?
So there you go.
The economy must be turning up.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. What's in a name? You know, you talk about your favorite driver, NASCAR driver, Greg Biffle. With names like Greg Biffle, Rich Bickle, and Dick Trickle, which are all household names in NASCAR Nation, I just wanted to introduce another name to members of F1 Weekly Familia, a team owner by the name Billy Ballou. What say you?
It reminds me of a movie that starred Lee Marvin and Nat King Cole.
What was it called?
Cat Balloon.
Ah, meow. Okay, now we come to famous last words. This was actually in the form of an email that I received from our man back east, GT Racer 37 on the forum. He went to Watkins Glen qualifying, and I thank him for listening and taking the time to send me an email. And this really qualifies as famous last words. He wrote to me that Miss Milka Duna was called by a fellow racer the 12th corner on Watkins Glen 11-turn track. And so all I can say regarding the 12th turn is there's a couple of humps. Or bumps. Or as Derek Dilley would say, booms.
Or maybe she's expecting.
Venezuela oil, you know.
Yeah. And she was so slow, he wrote to me, that her quality time was over 8 seconds slower than the next fastest car. That is pathetic. I mean, she's a nice lady. I wish
her
well.
I like her.
Yeah. And I respect all her 3 degrees, you know. But, please, this is really the reverse of, what is the reverse of Andale?
It's delay on.
Delay on, yeah. This is what it is.
Yeah, it's bad. That's really bad. We'll give her a call.
Yeah, and give her a collect call. Sidgo will pay for it.
No, sure. Chavez will pay for it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's time for F1 Goodie Bag. Some important motorsports history in this week. July 6, 1907. First race held on the Brooklyn Circuit in England. And this whole Brooklyn Park is now owned by Mercedes. And thanks to Mr. Peter Brazier, I was there twice in the last 18 months. And next time, it's not too far from Heathrow. It's just a fabulous place to go and just
spend. Now, how did the Germans wind up with Brooklands?
Well, it's the Mercedes, stuff there. And, you know, the interesting thing
I thought we won the Battle of Britain.
Huh? Well, that's for General Motors part. But anyway, these things happen. You know what? When I was there with Mr. Brazier, we were looking at the museum. They have a motor sports and aviation museum also. And there was this engine of a German Junkers bomber, I believe, which was dug up many years after the war from the ground there. Actually, two or three were... How many engines? However,
three engines on a Junkers.
Yeah, three or four, whatever. They had more than one engines were recovered, you know, from the ground many years after the war. And this was obviously shot down over the Brooklands area because they were doing some manufacture of aviation parts and this and that. And it says that the second engine is in a museum in Canada. There's quite a bit of history there. And I love history, as you know.
Yes.
So, okay, July 7th, 1957. Juan Manuel Fangio, driving a Maserati 250F, wins the French Grand Prix at Rouen, a road circuit near Paris famous for the Nouveau Monde corner. Have you ever been to Rouen, sir?
Yes, sir.
You like that place?
I do.
Good. That's I need to make a run there, Rouen, Reims, Paul Ricard. And I'm pretty hopeful that I can at least hit Paul Ricard next May when I go to Formula Uno de Monaco. That's the game plan. Let's see what time and destiny brings. July 8, 1962, Porsche wins their first and only a Formula One race with Dan Gurney at the wheel in the French Grand Prix, also at Rouen. And his victory at Rouen in 62 was the first cover on the very first issue of Motorsports Memories calendar. I'm very proud of it.
And copies are available, of course.
Yeah, if somebody's interested, I have a few. I always keep a few copies for posterity. Okay, now, shall we take a little break and do a commercial for Nathan Hot Dogs?
No.
How about PBR?
PBR is good.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll take a quick break.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break. We'll pass a couple of PBRs out, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now this red and white blue segment is sponsored by PBR, American First.
Thank you, sir. American First. Well, this is our first podcast after the July 4th holiday. I imagine you had quite a few hot dogs.
Yes, sir.
That's good. With Keith Lorraine.
Yeah, right? Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
And McDowell.
Yes. How about you, Mr. Fab?
Wonderful.
Very good.
Wonderful holiday.
Okay, so I thought we'll do a red, white, and blue goodie bag. A look at some American achievements and important events in the Formula One Americana Historia.
Is USF1 in here?
No, this is about achievement. If I was doing a segment called Americana Jackasses, they would be on the top of the podium.
I understand.
And it'll be a tie for first.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
We'll get the jackass back in the studio for that sound effect.
Yeah. Okay, where are we now? As we all know, Formula One World Championship started in 1950. In the inaugural season, there were seven qualifying rounds. One of them was the Indy 500. Race winner Johnny Parsons thus became the first American to score victory and championship points in a Formula One event. You know, some years ago, I have some few racing history books. I was going through one of them, and it was, I think it was printed in or reprinted in the 80s. And it had like the most number of drivers who took part in Formula One events. And I was like, whoa. I mean, U.S. was like second or third ahead of France and Germany. I said, man, what happened? Who am I missing here, you know? I mean, I know the main players, you know, Gurney and Ginther and Hill. And then it says, oh, it must be the Indy drivers also, and that's what it was. But on paper, it looks good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And it was part of this championship, so there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, first American points. I went through every race starting the 50th, and if I'm wrong, please let me know. because you don't want to give out wrong information. Looks like first American points in a Formula One Grand Prix, not including the Indy 500, came in the 1956 Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps when Harry Schell finished fourth in his Van Wall. And you know, Harry Schell was kind of like you, his parents were, well, half like you, but his parents were both Americans. He was born in Paris and lived there almost all his life. Quite a guy and character from that era. Anyhow, first U.S. Grand Prix in 1959 at the Sebring track, as we all know, was the final round of the season and was won by Bruce McLaren in a Cooper, making him then the youngest Grand Prix winner at that time. And I'm sure you remember who broke Bruce McLaren's record in 2003, I should say.
You mean that Spanish guy?
Yeah, and there were some issues there also, the expanding tires. But it was a very impressive win, and I watched that race back home with my friends from days gone by, and he lapped Michael Schumacher in that race.
Yeah, that was my favorite, and the expanding tire was within the rules.
It was. At that time, it was within the rules. That's why they were doing it. And so, here we go. Phil Hill was the first American to win an F1 Grand Prix. His maiden win for Ferrari at Monza in 1960 was the last ever win for a front-engine car in Grand Prix motor racing. In 1961, Phil Hill became the first American world champion, of course at the same race in tragic circumstances, and he remains as the only US-born Grand Prix world champion. Mario Andretti, of course, 1978 world champion, born in Italy. Dan Gurney gave three different teams, this is very impressive, three different teams their maiden wins. Porsche at Rouen, as we discussed in 1962, French Grand Prix. And 2 years later, same track, same Grand Prix, he gives Brabham the first ever win. And of course in 1967, the Eagle win at Spa-Francorchamps. And Dan Gurney is the honored guest, career is the featured thing at the, now it's called, what is it, French Rolex Reunion Motorsports at Monterey,
something like that,
or something
yes.
like that. So I will be there, and I'm sure you'll be there too. Mm-hmm. Right?
And Dan will be there. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. Third California driver, Richie Ginther, also made history in 1965 when he gave Honda and Goodyear their first Grand Prix victory in Mexico City when the Hermanos Rodriguez circuit was called Magdalena Michoacá, a name I like very much. And it's gone now. And Goodyear to this day, and this is interesting, you know, with all the hoo-ha-ha coming about Pirelli coming in, Goodyear to this day remains the most successful tire company in terms of race wins in Formula One. And you know, time is an issue, but there are some other names I would like to mention, and if anybody is interested in doing more research, you know, I'm sure they will. But I just didn't have the time to put down more info. But I'll mention some names. Teddy Mayer, you know, he died some years ago. Famous as McLaren team owner, James Hunt and Emerson Fittipaldi won championships with Mayer. Mayer run McLaren. He was a lawyer by training and was managing the career of his brother Timmy when Timmy was killed in a Formula Tasman race in Australia many years ago. And of course, one of the most famous, you know, team managers in the last 25, 30 years. Tyler Alexander, he's also from the U.S. He was one of the original members of the team started by Bruce McLaren. And you know, next time I go to, now that I have a good contact at McLaren's PR department, I would love to talk to Tyler Alexander. And if I remember, actually I have a picture of me, not talking to him or dealing with him, but in the same shot as him. When I went to 1982 Brands Hatch, Lauda was testing for McLaren. He was there also. And I remember chatting. I did a little brief chip chat with John Bernard because he was such a big name at that time. But Tyler Alexander apparently also has a very impressive collection of racing photographs going back four decades of Formula One racing, Can-Am, this and that. So that's high on the agenda. And then there is a gentleman by the name of Carl Kempf, K-E-M-P-F. He was an engineer. And he is basically credited with the first use of what we call now telemetry. He used to work for Tyrrell, and he used some computer work to, you know, get data, this and that. And then, of course, there is Steve Nichols. He designed cars for McLaren when Senna was there. So there is a lot of American involvement, you know. And also a couple of very, very famous photographers that anybody who has any interest in motorsports history would know. Lewis Clementowski, a famous photographer from the pre- and post-war era. And he has a pretty good website, a lot of old pictures, mostly black and white. And, of course, Jesse Alexander, also a famous name behind the lens. You and I did an interview with him when he asked me if I was from Portugal.
Exactly.
So I told him he had the P correct, but the country wrong. So, and then, of course, we have John Frankenheimer. He brought Grand Prix on silver screen to millions around the world. And I'm very happy to say I was one of them and enjoyed watching the movie immensely with my homies long, long time ago in Karachi. I think it was 1975, if I'm not mistaken, when I got to watch this movie. So that's all for this week, folks. Thank you for listening. I will slip away now with some Pat Metheny. Enjoy.
Thanks, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Stay tuned for the interview with Burak Sartag.
Okay, folks, this is our first interview at JFK. And we say welcome to one of our most loyal and earliest listeners, all the way from Turkey, Mr. Burak Sartag. Burak, welcome to F1 Weekly and JFK. How are you?
Thank you. How are you?
Doing very good. Good to see you. First of all, how did you find F1 Weekly, sir?
F1 Weekly, I came across with a search. I always had interest in this sport, and one day I just came across with the website, and that's how I found them.
Now, I understand your interest in motor racing was sparked not by going to a racetrack or watching a race on TV, but on PC. Tell us a little bit about this background, please.
Sure. It was my mid-teens, and where my cousin got his first PC, and that time we are talking mid-80s, where PCs were extremely rare, and who is like 7-8 years older than me, and he was playing this game, and unfortunately as a teen, you know, early teens, I wasn't able to touch or play with that PC without his permission. And he's a motor racing fan, and he was playing this Formula One game, a racing game, and he started talking about Formula One, this, and that's how I got into it.
And what part of Turkey are you from, sir?
It's a city on the west coast, close to Greece. It's called Izmir. The old name was Smyrna. It's the third largest city, and population, I believe, is around like 4 million.
Okay, now your country has a fantastic Formula One track. How popular is motor racing? I know rallying is very popular in your country. How popular is Formula One? And does the average person follow Formula One? Like he would follow football, he or she would follow football?
Unfortunately, soccer is unbeatable. You cannot beat soccer. But I should say Formula One is up there. If we rank top five sports, Formula One will definitely make it. And we have decent media coverage, and every race is live, and we have the track. That was a big help. Unfortunately, this ticket prices issue, the track is not getting enough crowd.
Now, you have been to this track. How do you like the track? Not just because it's in your home country, but as a facility, as the layout. What's your opinion?
It's a nice track, I should say, and especially being counterclockwise is good, and overall the facility is good. But if I have to add, my big problem with the track was I think seating can be done a little better. You don't have the great views, or, you know, even though grandstands are nice, okay, grandstands is everywhere nice, but rest of them, like turn 8, which is a very famous turn, there's a very limited seat, and I love to sit on turn 8.
Now, what year were you at this race, and who won the race?
It was Felipe Massa's first one on 2006, right? Yeah.
Wow. Okay, and talking of Felipe Massa, what's your assessment of the season so far? We're a few days away from the Spanish Grand Prix. Do you think if... I hear there will be rain in Spain again, but if it's a dry race, and let's just say the next five, six European races are dry races, do you think Red Bull will be steaming ahead or others will be catching up?
It will be a tough call. Definitely Alonso will push, and then Red Bull will push. And I believe, you know, I think we will have a fantastic Silverstone race with two McLarens and these guys. And like Monza, Ferrari cannot lose at Monza and McLaren cannot lose at Silverstone. So Silverstone will be maybe one of the most memorable races of this year.
Now, Mr. Michael Schumacher has been struggling so far, especially against his teammate Nico Rosberg. Has that been a surprise for you?
Not really. He's been away 3 years and he's 40 years old. You have to give it to him. And I think, you know, a lot has changed since he left the sport. And I think he has a little more catch up to do. And I believe he will come back. Maybe we're not going to see him as what he used to be 6 years ago, 5 years ago, but I believe he will make a comeback.
If you were to bet 1 million Turkish lira today, who would be 2010 world champion?
I'll split between Alonso and Vettel.
That is also my call. Okay, now going back to your early interest in motor racing, what are some of your earliest memories? What memories do you cherish most? And, you know, we'll have more questions on some past races.
Mika Hakkinen was pretty much my idol for the sport. And when I, you know, I seen a lot of people, maybe I don't remember all of them. As you can imagine, at those times, live coverage was almost impossible in Turkey, so we were listening through either a BBC radio or some kind of pirated VHS tape somehow we got our hands on. So there were no live, but I appreciate what sport used to be and where it is right now.
In the first 10 years of you were following this sport, wonderful sport I might add, are there certain events, certain moments, certain races, certain passes, good, bad, ugly, whatever, that stand out for you?
You know, I seen a lot of races, but it's not, you know, Formula One, if you're going to watch Formula One, watch it live, because then it's not a racing for me. But yes, there have been a lot of races, particularly my favorite track, as I assume a lot of people can agree, is Spa. I think Spa is the ultimate track. And any Spa race, I'll take it, because I don't remember in the near past or in the long past that Spa had a boring race. So any Spa race, I'll take it.
Well, there was a very exciting race, at least the last few laps, some years ago, when Raikkonen crashed while battling with Lewis Hamilton, and then he was given a penalty. Did you like that penalty, sir?
I definitely don't agree with it. They were literally tiptoeing the last laps, as you mentioned, and that was a political penalty. I don't think he deserved that. And he didn't do anything wrong, in my opinion, and he didn't affect anything at the result, because Raikkonen ended up crashing. So there's nothing wrong, I think, Hamilton did.
Okay. Now, Fernando Alonso had a big battle with Hamilton when they were at McLaren. Whose side were you on?
I was with Hamilton.
Why? Por qué?
Alonso is a very talented driver. Hamilton is a talented driver. If you put them on scale, it will be hard, or it will be a very close call. But Hamilton seems to be like a little more gentleman side when it comes to the issues. You know, he keeps his quiet so far, and I think I like the way his sportsman side, and as a gentleman, or as a man, what we can say.
Well, there was this two sides to every story. There was this Liegate issue in Australia. What say you on that?
That's a different ball game. So, You see, I think he lost his ego and then he just went on a rampage and he just took it. You know, when you're in the cockpit, you are a different person. Maybe he's young, he lost it, he couldn't keep his cool or something. I think something went down, and I think everybody's allowed a couple mistakes, and we can mark it as one of his.
Okay, fair enough. He's only human. Now, we are here in beautiful New York City, and there is now recently talk about Formula One race may come to Jersey Park, Liberty Park, or whatever, you know, a place Bernie can find. So you can say he has a New York skyline as a backdrop. Do you think this will ever work out, or what's your take? And where would you like to really see a U.S. Grand Prix?
New York is definitely not the place to do a Grand Prix, but if they really want, not Jersey City, no Staten Island, definitely. I think they can move it away, but they will lose the city side in the back. Nobody will get the view of the city, but what's wrong with Indiana? You know, if you want to have one US Grand Prix, you have the track, or do West Coast, don't waste more money, waste government money to build a track, and Bernie will say, okay, you guys have it 5 years, then I lost interest on you stuck with the track.
Now, you had mentioned that there was a dollar amount that Bernie is asking the Turkish authorities to pay to FOM. What is that amount? Will you please mention that?
As far as I read from the press, it's up to $82 million now with everything, you know, the whole as a package deal, and there's no way they can make it with the ticket sales.
Yeah, and I think it's very, very unfair to ask a country for that kind of money, but that's just my personal opinion. Okay, talking of Indianapolis, I understand you've been there. You were at that very famous historic 2005 race. You had a close encounter with Ralf Schumacher. Please tell us about that.
When he had the crash, I was literally by the stands where he had the crash, and literally we saw him coming to the wall, and to my best ability we saw his tire just being shredded, and we were like, you know, it's everything happened in an eye blink, so we see it coming and we saw him, and as we all recall, he'd been sitting there almost like 7, 8, 10 minutes and every car was passing by, so it was kind of hard.
Yeah. Now, you know, we have a lot of ladies racing in this world, this day and age. How long do you think it will be before we see a very competitive female Kimi Raikkonen? Hopefully not high on vodka.
It can happen next year. I haven't come across any names that's like rising in GP2 or GP3 G series right now, but it can happen in 3 years, 4 years. You don't know who's going to be the next big thing. Like, people just pop out of nowhere. Like, okay, Hamilton was invested for so long, but where did Vettel came from? Where did Kubica came from? They got on the radar, they were low, and all of a sudden now they're the rising stars. So you never know, but I should say within the next 5 years we should at least maybe get some testing or third drivers, hopefully.
Now, our forum is very busy with also, and I appreciate that very much and thank everybody. As soon as the practice starts, people start putting live now on this link, whatever it may be. And I know different people have different ways to watch races. What can you tell us about how you view Formula One without giving too many secrets away?
I work for an Italian company. So, and we have our headquarters in Bologna, and thanks to a couple of my connections, I have a Euro cable channel that I can watch from my home PC.
Wow. How is the coverage compared to Speed TV, in your opinion?
Speed TV is okay, but if I have to pick one, I'll pick the European.
Okay. Now, you mentioned about Italian company. You have a co-worker who has a brother who has worked in Formula One. And tell us a little bit about meeting him and going to his place and what you were shown.
It's this co-worker that actually works in Bologna. And one of my trips, we went out to a dinner and we start talking, you know, the hobbies and everything. We eventually we start talking about Formula One, and he said his brother used to be work for Arrows and Jordan, and now he's working in a totally different field, but still in motorsports. Maybe motors, let's say, not sports. And he said, on your next visit, I will arrange a trip. And we went to his home. I was surprised that how many old used Formula One parts. I can say wheels, brakes, everything you can imagine. Like from gears to bolts, he has this amazing collection of old car pieces. You cannot put a car together, but they're all pieces.
See, you're lucky I'm not Peter Windsor, otherwise I'll be asking you if the brakes were Hitco, Carbon Industries, or Brembo.
I'll take Italians.
Brembo, okay, great. Well, you know, shortly I'll be hopping on a plane, so I thank you so much for meeting me here. Thank you so much for, you know, walking with me in Manhattan, and we also met our friend Mr. Mark Trumpur and lovely Miss Erin Lunders all the way from Nebraska, giving a rundown on her exploits in South America. So we shall do this again soon. How about a message for fellow members of F1 Weekly Familia?
I think as a familia we are doing okay, and it's a good form. It's a great podcast. Thank you, and Steve, Clark, everybody who has bits in it. And I should say, as a closed, or I shouldn't say that big, but I think we have something ticking, and we can share ideas, and that form and podcast is definitely fun.
You know, we have quite a few characters on the forum. How many laps you think F1 Weekly family is from being a dysfunctional family?
Oh, yeah, we have some agreements, disagreements, but I think we find our way. I don't think we are on the road to be a dysfunctional family.
And one final question, who's going to win the Spanish Grand Prix? And Monaco Grand Prix is a week later, so give me two winners, please.
Eventually, Mr. Alonso will do whatever he can to take the Spanish. And Monaco, I will call it Hamilton.
We shall find out in 2 weeks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Barack, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now, let's go right into the wrap-up with the forum updates.
This week's forum updates from Iceman. Here's this week's forum updates brought to you from sunny Dublin. The forum has been buzzing as usual. Posting continues in the ever-popular How I Live in the Countryside topic. Now at a staggering 209,100 views, which is now focusing on Ye's x-rays and how he wants to get a copy of them. Beats me why. Running an easy second in popularity is the Android versus Apple thread. You're either in the closed Apple fanboy club or an embracer of Android, the open source champion. Then we have a now missing Tricky Dicky happy birthday thread. Dr. Mark sent him an MX-5. And other birthdays include Schumacher Grill, 1956, who hasn't been active for quite some time. A quiet, enthusiastic member known as Ye, sporting the latest in F1 Weekly headgear, also turns up posing in photos with a smiling spandex-clad Mark Webber. We close out this week's update with the news that Ralf Schumacher, formerly known as Half, started from the latest DTM race from pole. Shows what can happen to your career after a NASA interview. Talk to the guru you know you want to. Thanks, Iceman.
Okay, on today's program, Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Red Line Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, just go to CameronKarting.com. That's CameronKarting.com. I want to mention Facebook and Twitter. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. And I want to make a quick thank you for our executive producer, David Tapia. Of course, Toby Dawes, always working behind the scenes, trying to improve things to go faster and faster. Of course, I want to thank all the listeners, good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.